Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Anthony Rizzo called last night's crazy 12-11 win over the Giants a season-defining win. Do you agree? And how would you define the Cubs with 36 games to play?
Yeah, I don't agree because I don't think that defines their season. I just think it's a poorly thought-through idea from Anthony Rizzo. I think I get what
That's
he meant.
That's what Riz told me.
Yeah, I think Riz, season-defining, I mean, no, we haven't seen that much offense from them. We haven't seen the comebacks. You know, unfortunately, the season-defining moments have been bullpen meltdowns and grand slams against, not necessarily that happening. And again, they were at home. The Giants put up a hell of a fight, if you think about it, in Wrigley, because that crowd was going crazy. The Cubs had that game sewed up. They ended up winning it, but I don't quite understand season defining. Again, Joe saying I've been involved in a lot of seminal moments, and hopefully this is one of that is a very nice comment. I like that idea that you have planted a seed now that will grow into what the Cubs are. I don't know how to define the Cubs with 36 games to play. I don't know that they are in first place forever and the rest of the season. If you would like to believe that they're back in first place and they're back there to stay. But I can't say that for sure. They went on the road on a 10-game road trip with winnable games, and I felt like they had the three-game lead over the Cardinals and 3.5 over the Brewers, and I thought they would definitely come home in first place, and that would be a sort of defining moment for them.
Okay.
And instead, they lose on the road 4-6, and they absolutely lose the lead in the division, which I think is awful.
I think this could be a glass half full or glass half empty thing, because in the immediate aftermath of the celebration, this is what he said and this is the way he assigned what happened, a season defining moment. And I get that, because if you're the Cubs and you're Anthony Rizzo, you're looking at it this way. Your season bottomed out last Friday night in Pittsburgh. Your second straight night that you had suffered a walk-off loss, and the night before in Philadelphia was, you know, it had to be emotionally just catastrophic. You Bryce Harper hits the grand slam. You haven't lost since. You haven't lost since last Friday night. So you had many times last night in a game that included five lead changes where you could have said, all right, this is, you know, you're going to lose this game. And the Cubs came back and Chris Bryant had the big hit. So in that context, to me, it defined what they are to the Cubs themselves. And that is a resilient team, a team that never says die. A team that's what they want to look at. That's the way they want to look at it. Actually, that's the way they have to look at it, because, with 36 games left in this season, this is a team capable of big things but susceptible to a stumble. And you're getting a team that is seemingly unbeatable at home and can't get out of their own way on the road. So you're having a season that has been defined by the best of times and the worst of times. And that, in a nutshell, was what last night represented. So when they won, I get it. It was definitely a microcosm of the season in many ways. So the season defining made sense to me.
Well, hell of a game, obviously. Entertaining pretty much from start to finish, no matter which team you were rooting for to win. Season defining, no. I don't know if I'd go that far. Mully, I think I tend to maybe agree with you here. I think if it was a real season defining win, to me, it would have been Craig Kimbrell blowing the save in the ninth inning, because that's what you've seen more often than not from the Cubs late in games and with their bullpen. I think that would have been more season defining if they would have had a power outage and scored, one run off of three hits. I think that would have been more season defining.
They did blow the lead, like several
times. They did blow the lead several times, and Darvish wasn't very good either, which is going to get buried in all of the other hubbub today. He was quite poor, probably his worst start that he's had since the first half of the season, but that doesn't matter because they won the game. It was a great moment. The notion that Chris Bryant is this, you know, choke artist, not clutch player, I think is hopefully being dispelled now, and maybe we can start to move past that idiotic conversation. But as exciting as last night's game was, I wouldn't call it season defining. And I think, you know, by the time they go on their next road trip where they're under 500 again away from Wrigley Field, we won't even remember what happened last night on
Wednesday.
Haven't
we had big moments like this where we've been trying to say that's the turning point type thing?
It seems like there's been two dozen of these moments where, like, okay, well, now it's like, am I crazy? Does everybody have amnesia here? Like, all of a sudden, we're finally buying in on August 22nd that these are the real Cubs. No, get the hell out of here. That was not season five. Great win. Entertaining game. Huge performances. Castellanos, massive again.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
But not season defining.
I agree. I cannot call it season defining because, I mean, this is, as Kevbo just said, this is what happens. The Cubs go on the road. They struggle. They come home. They play extremely well. And this is another case. Yeah, I don't think you want a season defining win to be one where one of the guys who's been essentially one of the aces of your staff, Yu Darvish, gets pounded. It was such a weird game for Darvish, but overall, not a good one. But no, not season-defining. Do this type of thing on the road. That's when I'll call it a season-defining win. We have yet to see the Cubs pull out a huge win like this, although you don't want to give up 11 runs in maybe a season-defining moment. But no, not yet. I want to see them do this type of thing, have a huge game on the road. I want to see them get a sweep on the road. I want to see that. That's what I want to see. I will reserve season-defining win for something away from Wrigley Field.
I know it's our job to do this type of stuff, and I totally get it, but if that's what Rizzo believes, and if there's been a cry for leadership...
That's what Riz told me.
Okay, there's been a cry for leadership, and if Rizzo wants this to be the pelt on the wall that's going to get them going, then fine. Fine. But you're right. What is lost in this is that they were up 5-2, and Darvish blew the lead. Right, and we were all bitching and moaning. I'm right in line, probably first in line, both hands raised over my head, that we wanted Yu Darvish to go longer, right? Why was Madden babying him? He kept taking him out, and the idea was he needed that feel-good moment, okay? Well, last night could not have felt good for Yu Darvish. So now what I'm worried about, because you can't just be happy. Okay, you can't just be happy. So now what I have to worry about is what is Yu Darvish going to be like in his next start? And I believe his next start will be away from Wrigley against the Mets, who are an up-and-coming team, and it'll be at Shea Stadium.
That could be season-defining.
That could be season-defining. And I'm too stupid to understand what the words Madden was using, so I can't answer that part of it. I don't know what that is. Those seminal moments. When I hear seminals, I think Florida State.
Okay. Spelled differently.
That's what I think.
It's all right.
I don't quite get the question.
Neither do I.
Florida man loses dictionary.
Is Brandon Morrow the worst free agent signing in the Theo Jed era, and will he pitch again in Major League Baseball?
Boy, talk about an overreaction. I think people forget Edwin Jackson, maybe, a little bit. Brandon Morrow definitely is in the team photo. Definitely the frustration is understandable. But, you know, Brandon Morrow was a two-year investment. Edwin Jackson cost you $52 million over four. Edwin Jackson went 16-34 with a 5.37 ERA. Edwin Jackson is the symbol of every bad free agent decision that comes after him that Theo Epstein has made as the president of the Cubs. I don't think that anybody was surprised or should have been surprised yesterday when they announced that Brandon Morrow was out for the season. That was the least surprising headline of the year. That was a season-defining headline for Brandon Morrow because he's not going to be available. His highlight of the season was talking to us at spring training. I mean, it went downhill from there. So I don't know.
We had a great conversation, like we always do.
Okay. I don't know if he'll pitch again. It sounds really bad. It sounds what he has is going to be very difficult to fix. The Cubs you know, can thank him for the memories and move on. It when he was healthy, and it was a very short time. Boy, that was a fun half season, wasn't it? It wasn't even like 3 months. He was really good. But I still think that Edwin Jackson, because of the money you invested at the time that you signed him, I know that it was a different era in Cub baseball. It feels like it. It was January of 2013, but it wasn't that long ago. But still, to me, Edwin Jackson, much worse investment than Brandon Morrow.
Yeah, it's a mean-spirited question, no doubt about it. I would think that, and I hate to say this, but Jason Hayward, it was probably in that conversation before this year. And that's just being honest about it. And how did Chatty look yesterday? Anybody see any of his performance?
We were talking
about him in a high-leverage situation, right? So we're not talking about that anymore either.
No.
You know, when guys get hurt, I tend to be a lot more forgiving of what goes wrong. And Brandon Morrow got hurt, and that was Joe's fault, and clearly they blame him for it, and that's going to come into play with the contract extension or lack thereof. I'm just trying to throw a little bit of poison into the old punch bowl. Brandon Morrow is a sad story because the guy was effective when he was healthy, but he's been hurt, and now he's out of contract, and he's 35. Is that right? I don't know why. I don't know if he wants to come back. I don't know if he wants to go through another surgery and then go through all that follows that. And then what? You're 36, you're 37, and you're making a comeback. It's all in his, whether or not he plays Major League Baseball, it comes down to how much he wants to come back from that injury. It's simple as that. And I'm not trying to tear into him. But yeah, when Jason Hayward's greatest moment was the speech, and then you couldn't make any moves up till this year. You could have made that argument. I think he's had a really good year, and I think he's one of their better players right now, and I'm glad to see that happen. But it was pretty rough getting there.
Yeah, I think it was definitely, you know, a bad signing because, as you guys said, he was very good in the first half of last season, but that's all you got from him. He was completely injured the second half of the year. He didn't pitch at all this year. He's not going to pitch, and it's not... I never blame a player for being injured. I mean, nobody wants to be hurt, whether you're an athlete or you're just some guy going to work in the morning to break rocks or whatever it is that people do outside of radio stations. I really have no knowledge of that. But, you know, nobody wants to be injured. So I'm not going to begrudge Brandon Morrow for being hurt. But it's not like this kind of, you know, jumped out of nowhere on Brandon Morrow and all of a sudden he's instantly injured. I mean, the guy has been injured pretty much perpetually for his entire career. And the fact that the Cubs got him for two seasons, I think maybe is even a little bit of a silver lining. The fact that you don't have to pay him extensively after these 2 years and you can kind of wash your hands with this experiment and be done with it. So I think you do have to rank it among some of the worst signings that Theo has made. I mean, the Tyler Chatwood one was probably be my top pick because he's still around for another year and you don't even really know what to do with him. He can't start. He's not very useful out of the bullpen. I think that's probably the worst one. And don't, let's not forget, you know, don't let these last two games distract you from the fact that Craig Kimbrell has been an absolute dumpster fire since he's come to town as
you
well.
You can't name him their worst signing.
I can put him on the Mount Rushmore. If we're building a Rushmore of bad
pitches
PO
last
signings.
Night. You are, 11 pitches.
You are so quick to judgment.
I'm quick to judgment? I have never been quick to do anything.
Give him 5 minutes.
Okay, well, he's up there. He's in the conversation, all right?
That's not what I've heard.
It'll be season-defining the next time that he blows a save.
When David Haugh invokes the name of Edwin Jackson, it's very hard for me to say that Brandon Morrow was the worst signing in the Theo Jed era, but yeah, definitely up there on the Mount Rushmore, as Kevbo put it. Yes, I mean, he gave you something in that first season, in the first half of the first season before he was hurt. I mean, he converted 22 of 24 save chances. He had a 1.47 ERA. He had the potential to be your closer and then just gets hurt. And, you know, there's no other way to put it than that's just unfortunate. That it sucks. It's unfortunate for Brandon Morrow. It's unfortunate for the Cubs. Will he pitch again in MLB? I don't know. That's a lot of setbacks. That is a lot of setbacks. And you have to take into account not only what that's doing to him physically, but the toll it's taken on him mentally. I don't know if we'll ever see him again in the MLB. I'm not sure, but... Brandon Morrow's up there. He's not the worst, but he is definitely up there.
Texter also points out Daniel Descalzo as an option. I don't think any of us mentioned him. But
hey, he's leading off for Iowa Friday,
yeah,
okay? Leave him alone.
He can stay in Iowa.
Descalzo, he could still be a World Series hero.
Sure, but Descalzo didn't get a...
So can Kimbrel.
How dare you laugh?
But Descalzo was brought in to be a utility guy, not to brought in to be the closer of a defending World Series champion team.
And not a $21 million contract for 2 years.
I mean, this is... Today, we're doing this. They won the game in unbelievable fashion. They're in first place. The Cubs are in first place.
Who exactly puts the questions together? Don't we all supply five questions and then you choose from them?
Honestly, no.
Listen, how many questions were you choosing?
This does not have to be a show-defining question.
I think there have already been a lot of show-defining moments today.
How about a seminal
It can't be a seminal one. It doesn't have to be, Dustin.
I don't understand that either.
All right, let's move it on.
That's a great question.
Is Lucas Giolito the best pitcher in Chicago? Was Wednesday's performance more impressive because of who he beat or how he beat them? And are you surprised by his strikeout totals in the second half?
I don't think this question went far enough.
Where did this one come from?
Is Lucas Giolito the best pitcher in Chicago ever? Is that what you are asking? Listen, Giolito, I'm delighted that he continues to be as good as he has been, and I worried after he had a little lapse kind of post All-Star game, and I worried that that he wouldn't be able to keep it going for the year. But man, he is their ace, and he has been just fantastic, and his strikeout total has been wonderful. I think again that it really, the fact that he can go on the road and beat and shut out the Astros and shut out the Twins and not need any help doing it is extraordinary, and I really would love to see other guys follow suit, and I'd like to see their rotation full of guys that go on the road and shut out everyone and strike out everyone, and I think that would be a great way to get a World Series.
The strikeout totals do surprise me in the second half. I mean, he's been more dominant than even in the first half in terms of Ks. This is what I like about Lucas Giolito yesterday. This is why it was ace stuff. If you go back to July 25th when he faced the Twins, he got rocked, gave up four home runs. And when you get back on the mound against a team that has rocked you the last time out, it gives them confidence, not you. You may be more determined, but it doesn't matter. This is one of the best offensive teams in baseball, and you shut them down. You did what aces do. You did what stoppers do. This is part of the evolution of Lucas Giolito this year. He shut down the Twins, and he looked masterful in doing so. So he is right now the best pitcher in Chicago. I think Jose Quintana would say, hey, I'm just as hot as Lucas Giolito. But when you look at the body of work from 2019, Lucas Giolito has the edge there overall. He's had the best season of any starting pitcher in Chicago. So I think you can say that definitely yesterday was a season-defining performance for Lucas Giolito.
Now, I think that's fair. Finally, a little sense comes to the program as we talk about the best pitcher in Chicago, one of the best pitchers in baseball. And we've asked this question probably about half a dozen times this year because the Cubs do have a very good pitching staff, very deep, a lot of very accomplished veterans, and Giolito has had a spectacular year. So we have asked ourselves countless times, is Giolito the best pitcher in Chicago? The answer is yes. The answer has been yes every single time that we've answered it. While the Cubs do have a lot of depth, they don't have one guy who has been near the level of Lucas Giolito this season. In fact, there's only been four other starting pitchers in baseball who are even comparable to what he's done this year. Max Scherzer, who's going to the Hall of Fame, Jacob deGrom, the defending Cy Young Award winner, and Lance Lynn and Charlie Morton, guys who will be competing for the Cy Young this year. So he's in very elite company right now, and I think last night, it was a day game, on the road against a very high-powered offense, I think now, yes, you could call that season-defining for Lucas Giolito, and I'm not at all surprised by his K totals because while those have spiked up a little bit, his stuff has been so nasty all year long that pretty much any time he goes out and dominates, I'm not surprised by it at all. And I think that's an important step for me personally as a fan, just expecting him to go out and dominate now to be able to get to that level and rely on him as a horse, as an ace. I think it's really big for both him and this organization going forward.
What a seminal moment for Lucas Giolito yesterday. Definitely.
That's what Riz told me.
Yeah, can you amplify a little bit on that, Ray? Can you explain what that means?
Yes, absolutely. it was okay, here we go. I don't want to waste any more time here. Lucas Giolito, hands down best pitcher in Chicago. The performance was so impressive. I'm not surprised by the strikeout totals at all. I mean, you look at what he's done. August 11th, 13 strikeouts against the Athletics, 11 against the Angels on August 16th, and then yesterday the Twins. Those are three of the teams with the lowest strikeout rates in baseball. I mean, this is him living up to his potential. He's not backing down in the big moments. You guys brought up what he did against the Astros in May, and now yesterday against the Twins. This is awesome, and I'm excited to see what else it is in store for us the rest of the season and next year for Lucas Giolito.
He's really good, but is he the best? I'm still not sure. The White Sox are 19 and a half games out of first place, even with the win yesterday. They got a full game, okay? I want to see him in a pressure situation. That was not pressure. Faced a good team on the road, day game. Twins don't need that game.
You don't think they want to win the division? They don't need that win. They need every win. They're in a pennant race.
They're three games up.
They're two games up now because they lost yesterday.
No, I'm looking at the standings right now. As of now,
we're both
as
looking at them from different sources.
I'm looking at
mine
the calendar.
Says two games
and mine says three.
Okay.
Whatever. They're two or three games up. Okay, the Cubs are also in first place, and we're acting like they're about to go down the drain as the biggest flop in the history of sports. Listen, I want to see him pitch next year in big moments. That's what I want to see. He's really, really good. He's really come around again. He was not good after the All-Star game. He was actually really, really... Okay, so he's good. Is he the best? Here's the question. Who would you want in an elimination game pitching in Chicago baseball?
Tyler Chatwood.
That might change the answer to the question.
Craig Kimbrell.
That is an unbelievably great question.
And by the way, what does the White Sox being 19 games out have to do with Lucas Giolito? He pitches once every 5 days.
Pressure.
Who's pitching tonight?
Eye on the ball here, Kebbo. Eye on the ball.
Ross Detweiler.
That's all I'm saying.
That is an unbelievably great question.
Where does he rank among the 10 starters in Chicago baseball?
Not ranked. With Yoan Moncada returning from injury and Giolito dealing, the White Sox have two players with remarkable turnarounds in 2019. Which player is destined for a similar dramatic reversal next season?
I don't think it's Ross Detweiler. I don't think it's going to be him. You could look at a couple different possibilities. I don't know if there's anybody that's going to make as dramatic of a turnaround as Giolito or even Moncada, because I think what he's done is made himself into an all-star caliber player. Maybe that's premature, but I think you have seen glimpses of that and you know the talent exists. I'd say you'd probably look at Ronaldo Lopez as a prime candidate. You'd like to see him take that Giolito-like step next year. If he can do that, boy, that rotation has some potential. If he can make the kind of progress that Giolito did from when he was at the bottom of the heap in terms of starting pitchers in the American League, if Ronaldo Lopez makes similar strides, wow, that's exciting to consider. Carson Fulmer is another guy to consider, a kind of a failed first-round draft pick who can't find a role, can't get his stuff, can't get command. Boy, if he can ever figure it out, you wonder about him. Maybe, in terms of position players, I don't know that anybody quite fits the profile of a guy that you expect a lot out of, you haven't gotten a lot out of. I'm not going to go to the Adam Engel route. I don't think that's probably a guy that's realistic. Yolmer is a guy that's kind of what you have at this point in time. So I think it's probably reduced and restricted to the pitchers and Fulmer or Lopez.
I would think that that Lopez is obviously the prime candidate. He's already having a much better second half than he did in the first half when he was rock bottom. I don't know that you'll see a Giolito-type thing in a long time. I mean, that guy's a really bright guy who went out and figured it out. He was on the verge of being demoted. I mean, he was in Carson Fulmer territory. I'm going to say Aloy. I'm going to say Aloy because I think Aloy is a really good player, but like Moncada, you just have scratched the surface of how good. And I think Aloy can come back next year and be an all-star and be one of the best players on the team. He's a really good young prospect, and he's gone up and down a little bit, and he's had these knicky-knack injuries. But in terms of, Moncada came in as the best player and the best young player in baseball, the minor league player of the year, whatever role you want to talk about. He was the top prospect in baseball and then struck out a lot and struggled and then showed the reason that he was the best player in baseball, and hopefully we'll see it again, the best young player in the minor leagues and all that. And I think Eloy could take that kind of a jump, go from being, you know, brought up and experiencing the major leagues, and man, he's got a lot of power, to being, you know, that guy's an all-star, that guy's a superstar, that guy's a great player. I think that he could make that jump from this year to next year, and Lopez will be the other guy. You know, Fulmer, I think, is going to wind up as a bullpen guy. Maybe he'll be okay in the bullpen. He certainly, I got to a point where I didn't want to see anyone with white glasses. It wasn't just him. It was all people wearing white glasses. If I went to Florida, I would be swiping them off people's faces and throwing them into the highway.
More so than you already do?
I do stuff like that because I have these kind of post-traumatic stress disorder moments where I think of Carson Fulmer.
It's part of being a White Sox fan.
Yes. Yeah. No, but I think that's an interesting one because you could see him grow into a bullpen role. That might be where he winds up. But Lopez's starting pitcher has been pretty disappointing this year and still has a lot of possibility.
I think I'm going to go with Eloy also. I mean, you look at the numbers on the surface, you know, 241, 22 home runs, 52 RBIs, given the fact that he's been on the injured list a couple of times. The numbers aren't bad by any means, but you'd like to see him become more of a well-rounded player. I mean, the defense is never going to be elite level.
He might be the American League Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a
zero WAR.
Well, it's
David
it's
Bodie has a 1.9 WAR. I mean, and he's in Iowa.
Well, David Bodie is also.
I'm just saying.
I mean, WAR. Huh.
WAR.
What is it?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Eloy's WAR right now, I believe, is 0.3.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So it has ticked up just a notch.
He's had a good couple of games.
Yeah. He needs to be better defensively, you know, just so he's not embarrassing himself out there in left field and potentially injuring himself, which he's had a couple of real scary moments out there. Just be competent in the outfield. While the home run totals are nice this year, you know, the slugging percentage is not where you'd like it to be. I think he needs to hit way more doubles. You know, you don't expect him to hit a lot of triples, but I think he needs to be driving the ball a lot more, and he's so strong. He doesn't even need to swing the bat very hard because he's such a strong kid. So I think that will come in time. But I think if there is one player that you can kind of peg for a turnaround for the next season, I think it would be Eloy.
I'll go with Ronaldo Lopez because he's shown you flashes. He's shown you flashes of what he could be, and he's been better in the second half of this season, and particularly at home, pitching well. So that's who I'm going to go with. He's given you flashes here and there. Can he take the next step? Can he be consistent? Can he be that third guy in your rotation or the fourth guy in your rotation? I think we've seen bits and pieces of that, and I would love to see him take another step forward and have another feel-good White Sox pitcher story for next season.
How about Michael Kopech? How about that for a name?
Well, I like that one.
Just to change it up.
I mean, that answer.
Eloy really makes a ton of sense, but just for the sake of being different, I mean, if he's all of a sudden your second or third starter and we just barely got a taste of him last year, he could really, really change. If he's special, they're in the playoffs next year. Let's put it that way.
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Tony and I can't answer that.
What did you make of the SI story on the Bears kicking situation, and what do you make of Matt Nagy's response?
Why, it wasn't complimentary. And you know, I hate to say this because I understand that it was a well-researched story and everybody was talked to and all that, but disgruntled former employees upset with kicking process, that's one of the headlines too, sadly. They made this Jamie Cole guy out to be a complete buffoon, and worse than that, even, you know, a guy with kind of dual purpose, a guy that is a walking conflict of interest. So that didn't sit well. You know, I wouldn't argue the idea that Cody Parkey might be a better option than the guys they have, because I'm not sure they believe. You know, you're not out offering a conditional fifth-round pick for a guy if you really believe you have the position answered. And I don't know that they have answered it. And I think that people that have gone through it didn't like the way it was done. But I'm gonna say the Bears have looked like they know what they're doing. I'm going to wait until something bad happens this year before I actually criticize them. I think that they've been on quite a run, Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, and I like that partnership. So I'm not going to sit here and complain about how the kicker thing was handled, not until it fails.
Thoroughly reported, well-written, reputable author. look, that's not the problem here. My issue was with kind of what you alluded to, Mully. Whiny kickers going into great detail about an interview process that ended without them getting the job. Boo-hoo. Boo-hoo. It just sounds that way. I don't believe there was a conspiracy. Think about that.
It's That's an NFL what Riz told me.
A results-oriented business. There's going to be a kicking conspiracy? You think Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy would be party to something like that?
No chance.
Now, look, Jamie Cole does sound like somebody who is worthy of your skepticism. And maybe a background check. That wouldn't hurt. But the notion that he rigged the process, to me, it's a little far-fetched. So saying all that, the Bears probably deserve this. They probably deserve this second-guessing. They deserve this bad publicity. They invited the circus to town. They can't really complain now about the dancing elephants and the juggling clowns distracting them because they said, hey, we're going to put up a three-ring circus, Barnum and Bailey style. So I've always wondered if this approach would come back and bite them. I've always wondered if this was the right approach to be as public as they were about it. We don't know the end result, so it's difficult and premature to conclude right now. But this story probably consolidated a lot of those doubts, and I was fine with Nagy's response.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty short on time here, but I think it is fair to let the situation play out. It hasn't been an easy spot to fill for Ryan Pace since he's been here, since, you know, he got rid of Robbie Gould. He's not been able to find anybody. You know, that being said, I don't have a ton of confidence in them to get this thing right. And the fact that they still don't know who the kicker is going to be when they open up the season, I think, is very disconcerting as well. But I don't have a problem with Matt Nagy and what he said and the tactics that they're using to try these guys out. I don't care about the way they're going about it. I'm just worried about the end result and how they're going to get there.
I agree. I'm just sick of hearing about it. I just want this team to have a kicker and a good kicker, a reliable kicker. They call it the wildest kicker search ever held. I mean, maybe that's a little hyperbole, but yeah, as you guys said, they brought this on themselves. I'm okay with Nagy's response. I just want them to find a kicker, get it over with.
This is a typical, you see a headline, overreact to it in Chicago. This is a disgruntled employee, Mully, as you put it. I mean, shocking, breaking news. Disgruntled employee didn't former. Like the steps he or she was put through.
Disgruntled former employee.
Former employee.
Right, they're gone.
A lot of us never liked the gimmicks that Madden used. Some of us have become tired of them, and some of us still like them in this group that we've got right here. But this almost is right out of a Madden playbook. And what I see here is I could see myself as a former high school Division III football player. Like, I would have loved this if the kicker had cost me a huge game. I would have loved seeing a bunch of these kickers, non-football players, in my opinion, go through and put through these paces. That would have been for my pleasure. So there might be a little bit of that in this as well.
All right, that's the 5 at 5. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.